Shilas. So any Rav knows that the troubling child that Rav is either is Ezra Tshuva. Some was not had because of Tshuva. That's somebody else must catch up. The most relevant child, all the people who want to know about him is Ezra Tshuva. All the details of Pasachim. The Shulchan Aruch quotes as an age-old custom of the Rishonim, but who knows what goes back before the Rishonim, that we refrain from eating now the bread during the period of Ezra Tshuva. People are not familiar with this halachos because the rest of the year we're not so much, most people are not so much on Pasachim. So I thought to try to avoid all the shahs are going to come from everybody in the next week. So we'll try to talk about some of the things now. I'll try to get a little bit of an overview as to this Isser of Pasachim and the meaning of Pasachim, what the parameters of this are, particularly in the upcoming days of Ezra Tshuva. And we'll try to talk a little bit about some Divya service that we could perhaps walk away from this minute as well. The Sugya Pasachim begins in the Mishnah. Where the Mishnah lists off all the different things that the halacha prohibits us from eating with the Rabbanan, all series of Isurim with the Rabbanan. Actually, we just talked this Mishnah. Venus Pesa Nike, Magali. Can't get away from the Ramayas Nishil Muta. He tries as can. So comes the Mishnah and says that the Chavim prohibits eat Pasach, a bread that is baked by an Anjou. So in the same breath, the Mishnah says that the halacha prohibits what's called Shlokos, which is food that was cooked by a non-Jew. So Pasachim and Shlokos of Akum, we call Shlokos Bishalachim, that's the mission for us, was the Shlokos. And Shlokos and Pasachim were prohibited by the Chachamim. Why were these things prohibited by the Chachamim? Is it not a kashrus issue? So the least the way Rav and Rishonim assume, and the reason why Chazal prohibited both Pasachim and both Bishalachim was the Chashash Mishim Chasmas. We were afraid that we don't want people to get too palsy-wowsy, too close socially with the non-Jewish neighbors, lest this leads Chalila to intermarriage. We have to be polite, and we have to be respectful, and be courteous to one's non-Jewish neighbors. But there's a certain barrier, and the barrier has to be drawn very clearly. And crossing over that barrier of eating at the non-Jew's house, even though all the food is kosher, they had a mashgiach in there, everything is kosher. But if the food was prepared by the non-Jew, it was either cooked by the non-Jew, or bread was baked by the non-Jew, the Chachamim felt that was a little bit too much, and therefore they prohibited the Rabbanan to eat Pasach as well as Bishalachim. So if you look at the Mishnah, so you would walk away with the impression that these two Isurim are on equal footing, and they were both instituted, and they both appear in the same Mishnah. Whether chronologically they're both instituted at the same time is a different question. All the details of the love is not important right now, but it would appear that both of them have the same tokef and halacha. They both are serious. We have to be careful about both of them. Nevertheless, when you finish reading the Gemara, and particularly you read the Rishonim, and you read the Rishonim, so you walk away with a very, very different impression. That although, yes, it's true that in theory the reasons of chasmas apply to both, the Chachamim had some very, very serious reservations about this Issa de Rabbanan de Pasachim. The Chachamim were very concerned to really enforce this Issa de Rabbanan de Pasachim, and it's particularly in later generations, the Chachamim reevaluated the ability to even observe this at all because of the fear that it was a Shas Adchak. They felt that it was very difficult to have Jewish bakers. This is not true in the Middle Ages, sure it was true. That you had different times in history when the Goyim were in control of the baking industry, so it was almost impossible to get Jewish bread, so it's very hard to tell people that they can't live on bread. Tell people that they can't eat bishalach, tell people they can't live on cooked foods of Goyim. Survive without cooked food, survive without meat, survive without fish. You cook your own meat, you cook your own fish, but baking was something which was too difficult for the Jews to do themselves. And it wasn't practical to tell people that the candy bread was baked by a Jew. So therefore, in later generations, the Yerushalmi already records this, and then the Rishonim pick up on this. In later generations, the Chachamim lifted certain degrees of these prohibitions of Pasachim. They didn't lift the Yisur entirely. We assume halacha that they minimized the Yisur in the following sense. They reformulated the Yisur. The Yisur only applies if it's a social kind of a context. If there's a relationship, a potential relationship, with the non-Jews. If a non-Jewish neighbor makes you a beautiful loaf of bread, even though it's 100% kosher ingredients, then that would be a problem of chasnas. But if it's a professional baker, what the Gemara calls a paspalter, so if it's a professional baker, then there's much less of a fear of chasnas to be concerned with. And therefore, the gezeira was in effect lifted. In Bishalachim, there was never such a dispensation. And the rabbi Bishalachim, they never came up with any cool, they never came up with any leniency. They felt that we could really stick it out. We could observe the halacha the way it's supposed to be observed. The Pasachim, in later generations, the Chachamim felt that it was necessary to minimize the issue somewhat, and they reformulated it to be only if it's called Paspal of Ayes, is absurd. If it's Paspal, then it's going to be Mutter. What do you mean they reformulated the issue? What kind of game is this? They redid the issue, they did away with the issue. They're Rabbanan. We have a general cloud, and they base the Yom Lavat, and they base the Chavim. that a later Beis Din cannot just uproot previous dakonas of previous what they did him. Rambam writes in the Zamrim, and it's a strange thing, when it comes to Din Deraisa, so then a later Beis Din has more authority than when it comes to Din Derabana. When it comes to Din Deraisa, let's say 100 years ago, Beis Din had a Shalom of Shabbos, and they were machriya that this is the Mitzvah Deraisa Shabbos. And then a later Beis Din reevaluates the city and says, no, not true, not also. What the previous Beis Din said was not correct, and we want to uproot that psa. So the Rambam quotes Yerushalmi that says they have the right to do that. The second Beis Din is Bar Hochi, the Royal Ha'ra. So then we have a rule, Eilachar L'Shem, it should be a Mechel. You have to go to the Dayanim in that generation. You can't say, if the Chavetz Chaim would have been alive, I would have asked the Chavetz Chaim. But he's not alive. Rav Moshe would have been alive, I would have asked Rav Moshe. But he's not alive. You have to ask whoever the Dayanim, whoever the Rabban, whoever the Poskim in each and every generation. So comes the Rambam and says that that cloud, that the Gemara tells us that ain't Beis in Yochel Abato, different Beis in Chavero, Ella Gola B'chof Min, the Gemara, the Yidmas of the Tetzah, that's referring to the realm of Yisurim, the Rabbanon. The Beis in makes a Gezeir, the Rabbanon, so that a later Beis in can't just stop up with that unless they have more authority than the previous Beis in. When it comes to Dinim Deraisa, they can reinterpret a Din Deraisa, even if they're not on par with the previous Beis, that ain't the Chol Hashem, it should be enough. So Pas Akim was innocent of the Rabbanon. So what right? Did the later Beis Din have to minimize the Yisr, to reformulate the Yisr, to cancel the Yisr, abolish the Yisr? What cost did they have to do that? So the Rishonim explained that this is based on another principle, that it's called Lo Pashta Gezeir Barom Yisrael. When Beis Din makes a Gezeir or Beis Din makes a Takana, so they're not really, the Takana is not really Chal yet unless the people accept it. That we believe in democracy. So we the people, right? You said that, we the people. We the people? No. What's that, the opening line of? We the people, in order to form a perfect union, ensure for ourselves our modern new day that establishes the Constitution of the United States of America. Thank you very much. Okay. He is next. So that's what the halakha says. Also, that Klal Yisrael are the ones who are making these surahs. Doesn't mean every single Jew is going to vote and every single listen to their abundant. So the chachamim represent the people. So the chachamim, the chachamim ador, the eini ador. So they have to try to assess what the tzarech ha'av is. If there's a particular need to institute a nisa d'rabbanan, so then they'll do so. Let's say the Beis Din goots, and they make a takara, and it's a takara that Beis Din can't accept. So Beis Din wasn't supposed to do that. Ain goes in gzeira like tzibur, alukin rov, tzibuchom lamer, but Beis Din is not supposed to institute a gzeira unless they honestly assess that the tzibur can really can crack it. But what if they made a gzeira mistake? They made a gzeira, they tried, they thought the people were up to it. In fact, after a little while, a few generations, we see, it's not a little pushed over of Yisrael. So then the Rishonim write, based on the Gemara Masechta Zevachim, it's in the second part, if it's a little pushed over of Yisrael, so then the Beis Din, the later Beis Din, has the right to abolish the Gezeirah. The later Beis Din will say, listen, we can't have them. People can't do it. They're just not up to doing it. And then they have the courage to abolish the Gezeirah, even if it's not Gom B'chof from the Minyan. Even any Beis Din, any Sheikh, any Sanhedrin, get up and cancel the previous staff of the Beis Din, as long as it was a little pushed over of Yisrael. So that's what the Rishonim basically explained by Pasachim, but it never really caught on. It was too hot. People couldn't have it, and therefore it was a posture of Rabbi Yisrael, and therefore the later generation, so this Gezeirah was in fact this Batla. It's interesting, some Rishonim write that, can we pinpoint which Beis Din historically was the one that canceled Pasachim, or that minimized Pasachim? So some of the Rishonim write that we can't pinpoint, we don't know who it is. There must have been some phantom Beis Din somewhere that they must have done it. Because some Rishonim write, we see that nobody's mocking Pas Akim anymore, and we know the Gemara speaks about Pas Akim, and it must be that somewhere in the middle, somewhere, some historical Beis Din somewhere, was Mabatel, this very strange lashon that some Rishonim have. But whatever the case is, the Rishonim pretty much come to this conclusion, most of the Rishonim come to this conclusion, that Pas Akim was the first of the Rosh Yisrael. Now, what was that we find? That a Midig Yisrael develops, we find a strange Midig develops, that from the Seres Mechuvah, so everybody runs to be Machmir and Pasachim. Everyone's careful, no one relies on this school of Paspaltra anymore, everyone insists they're getting Dafka Jewish bread. So there are some posts who suggest that once such a minute develops to be Machmir during the X time, during this particular time of the year on Pasachim, so then it's not just Peteris Minig, it's Peteris, the original Lissa de Rabbanon. I mean, the original Lissa de Rabbanon was instituted, Kolz Mardechai Sol can accept it. The Kolz Mardechai can't accept it. They can't accept it. So 344 days a year, Chai Yisrael says, we can't do it. In the middle of December, the middle of July, we can't do it. It's too hard to be Machmir Pasachim. So the Gezeirah is Machmir. But if 10 days a year, Chai Yisrael feels that they can live up to a higher standard, they can keep what the original takana was, then the original takana was never this batla really in those days. So it comes out a very, very interesting chumrah that we usually think the pasakol is not as that's a minik, it's a chumrah, it's a chumrah, you do it, you don't do it, it's nishkefelach. So no, according to many acharonim, that pasakol during a seres mechuba is not a real din. Pasakol during a seres mechuba is a real takana sachom, is the original takana of the mishnah masech sefer zora. That mishnah, we cancel that mishnah, we erase that mishnah already, we don't follow that mishnah. No, we only don't follow that mishnah vis-a-vis the rest of the year because there's no pasha of Israel. Who was pushed to Baruch Yisrael during the Aseres Mitzvah, so be it. So during the Aseres Mitzvah, but the Din of Pasach is Mamsha Halacha. That's what some Achareinim suggest. So we find there's a similar style of a Takana that also was instituted by Chacham by earlier generations, and in later generations they realized people couldn't live up to it. But even though they abolished the Takana for the most part, they kept a little bit of a remnant, a little bit of a Zeich of the Takana. So the Mishnah says that the Mishnah says Brachos, the whole Sugi is about Balkari. That Ezra was the Sakin, that a Balkari, a man became coming to Balkari, so he's not permitted to learn, not permitted to daven, not permitted to say brachas, until he goes to the mikvah. So the Gemara says in Masechet Brachos that in the days of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, so the Chachamim abolished this takana. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira said it's not true anymore, we don't have to keep this anymore, and you don't have to go to the mikvah, you're allowed to learn and daven the brachas without going to the mikvah. So the Gemara never really explained what co-op Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira had to abolish the takana of Ezra. So Tosfos says, like, says, what's going on? How did Rabbi Yehuda Maseira abolish the Takana of Ezra? Ezra was a Beis Din Gadol b'Chochmah Bini, was a great Beis Din of Ezra. Now she gets that Gadol was a great Beis Din, the Bechilas covered Rabbi Yehuda Maseira. So what authority did Rabbi Yehuda Maseira have to abolish the Takana of Ezra? So talking about the Meiri, and that's again, Brachas is so bothered with that Kasha, that the Meiri says that we misunderstood what the Takana of Ezra was. The Takana of Ezra was not a Din Derabbanan, the Takana of Ezra was a Din Deraisa. I wasn't called Takana. Kind of just means he's the one who came up with it. He's the one who realized that his mamash isn't the Araisa for Balkari to learn Torah. Where did that come from? Who is it? Where's the Araisa? It must be learned after Mamun Har Sinai. Just as by Mamun Har Sinai, Rabban Shalom said that Ashlosh is Yama Tikshu Alisha, you have to get ready for Kabbalah Satorah. So the men have to become Torah from Tumas Keri, and the women have to become Taharos from Palet Mishikwa Zera, which is also a form of Tumas Keri. So you see that the Torah was not like that people can't be talking when they come to Kabbalah Satorah. So you learn that from Darius, but Darius, that's such a halacha. You're not allowed to be a Balkari when you learn Torah. So the Meiri says that was Mamash Adin Derais, that was Ezra's Chiddush. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira said, Rabbi Chilas Kavod of Ezra, it's not right, and we don't accept that Jerusha, there is no such halacha. That was a Harosha, it's not a Din Derais. And therefore, following the Rambam's Yerushalmi, Yerushalmi, Mamrim, that whenever it's a Din Deraisa, so Elena Bezdin has the right to change what a previous Bezdin said, because they're not coming to be Okir Takana, they're coming to be the Din Pshad and Din Deraisa, so then we invoke the principle of Emechel Shefet Shevi Amecha. So according to the Meiri, the Takana says it was so Chomer, it was a Deraisa, but how's the phrase go? I don't know. The higher they go, the harder they fall. It means the Takana was really strong, it was Mamish a Deraisa, yeah, but then you can knock it out. If it's a Deraisa, then Emechel Shefet Shevi Amecha. If it's a derabanan, then we got to deal with the problem. If they reckon with the issue of ein beis and yochel levantim to be beis and chaveres, so nobody holds it back to Yiri. That was mamash das yochel. So Tosfos is conventional wisdom. But Takanas Ezra Kipshuta was mamash as Takanas Achamim. If it's only a Takanas Achamim, so then what right did Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira have to abolish it? So Tosfos writes in the third book of Brachos that he had the right to abolish it, because it was L'Poshta Baruch Yisrael. It was nice that Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira realized, he lived a couple of generations after Ezra, he realized people just weren't up to it, they weren't following it. It was a big balagan, no one was following it properly anyway, so therefore he went ahead and he abolished it. It was L'Poshta Baruch Yisrael. So there is a minhag that developed also. All of a sudden we find the minhag quote in the Gaonim, and Erev Yom Kippur, everybody runs to the mikvah. Unless it's agreement, Erev Yom Kippur, everybody runs to the mikvah, Erev Yom Kippur. What do you want to do for Erev Yom Kippur for? So some Rishonim say, that's just a nice thing, tomb, you know, Tahara, Truva, etc. So others suggest that the Minhag Yisrael going to the mikvah Erev Yom Kippur was based on the following, that all year long, 353 days a year, we cannot live up to the highest standard of following the Tikkun HaSezer. It's too hard. But one day a year, Chashiyam HaKippur, Magal, HaKodesh, 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 one day a year we can't live up to a higher standard. One day a year we can't keep the Tikkun HaSezer. So therefore we tell all the men, they should go to the mikvah Erev Yom Kippur. That's why, in fact, there's one day in Yerushalayim that says that if a man became a Balkari on Yom Kippur night, he should go to the mikvah Yom Kippur morning. So we, in Shechanah, we don't follow them. But there's one opinion Rishon, the Torah quotes, that says that. It's mamash, a real din with the Rabban, you have to follow the Kodesh Ezra on Yom Kippur. So this minhag that we follow the Kodesh Ezra on Yom Kippur, is this just a minhag? It's just a chumrah bi'alma, just a midas chasidus? So it could be based on the Yisrael that's saying by Pasachom, it's more than this a midas chasidus. It's a real din. Because the Kodesh Ezra is still kayam as Mizban is there. Absolutely full force. The only thing is that 353 days a year, you don't have to follow it. Because it was a little Pashta for Rabbi Yisrael. But the one day when it was Pashta for Rabbi Yisrael, the one day when Klai Yisrael accepted upon themselves to follow it, so then it becomes, Mamash, it reverts back to its original halakhic status. It's not just the Chumra B'Yam. It's Mamash, a real mitzvah derabbanan. It's a real din derabbanan to follow the Tekunas Ezra. This is most probably the sheet of Rav Sajigon. The Rosh Yuma quotes the tradition from Rav Sajigon that when you go to the Mikvah Erev Yom Kippur, you recite a bracha. So the Rosh disagrees. The Rosh says we never heard of such a bracha for a man going to the Mikvah Erev Yom Kippur. And then we don't make that bracha. The Rav Sajigon seems to understand that it's mamash a real din. What's the din? The din is the Tekunas Ezra. His mind with the Tekunas Ezra was still valid before Rav Yudah ben Beseir. Those couple hundred years between Ezra and Rav Yudah ben Beseir, the man went to the Mikvah, but the Tekunas Ezra made a bracha. Because it was a real mitzvah the Rabban. It's called tefillah. Same way when we go to the Mikvah, she recites the bracha. So this idea that we find that there were certain takanas that were made, certain standards that were instituted by Chazal in the realm of Achalas Asuros, we don't want to eat bread of the non-Jews, or in the realm of Kedusha, of Tara, of Brachas, of Tefillah, that we don't want to say, we don't want to daven in a state of Tuma. So these types of things were instituted, and really the original plan of Chazal was that these should apply all the time. That we should be makben on Pasachim all the time, and we should be makben on Tuma and Tara all the time. In later generations, they saw it wasn't feasible, it wasn't practical. People weren't living up to it. So they reformulated these takanas. They limited these takanas. They minimized these takanas. But they realized, Chazal realized, that at least on Yom Kippur, certain times of the year, we can live our lives l'chadchila shel l'chadchila. Most of us live our lives with the b'di'evet. Halavai, we should live our lives with the b'di'evet. Most of us live our lives with shasachat. Some of us don't even live shasachat. So the goal is to live our lives l'chadchila. We're supposed to do mitzvahs l'chadchila. Sometimes people mistake, they misunderstand what the word b'di'evet means. Sometimes people think b'di'evet means a lower way of doing things. B'di'evet means after the fact. B'di'evet doesn't mean a lower way of doing things. It means you're not supposed to do a b'di'evet l'chadchila. That's a steer of nerves. Sometimes the guy says, if it's full of kosh b'di'evet, so I'll put him on l'chadchila. Because I'm not so from, so I can have b'di'evet from. No, that's not what it means. B'di'evet means b'di'avad. It means you did it already. Okay, now we have a different shayla. Once it was already done, so what do I do from here on in? So we're supposed to live our lives with chachilah. There is a principle in halacha called shasar chakin diyevadomi. There's a principle in halacha that sometimes you have a situation where it's a big shasar chak and there's no way to do things properly. So then we have a rule that something which would be mutter b'diyeved, if it's a shasar chakin diyevadomi. So that's a quality of psach halacha. When we apply them, we don't apply that. So here also, that we're really supposed to live our lives with Chachilu all year long. We should be Makbid and Pasachim all year long. We should be Makbid and Chachilu Ezra all year long. That's the way Chazal envisioned. That's the perfect world. Maybe about a Mikdash, maybe we'll go back to the Stakonis. But right now, it's not practical. It's not feasible. Okay, so then there are Klolim and Halacha. Not every time something's not practical, so we're just going to say, okay, you don't have to do it anymore. So then the Beisin has to have a Yishiv Adaf, and have a Moshe Beisin. And if it's a dinder rabbanon, so they have to abolish it, minimize it in certain ways. You have to go through the protocols of how do you revolve a takana, how do you minimize a takana. And then we reformulate the takana. They said, okay, it's not shy, it's not practical. So we're going to be misakid that you don't have to do it anymore. But when they felt that it was practical, it was still feasible, so they left it to talk to Harishon. And that's why we still have Pasach of Bizmanazer. Join us as Mechuba. But to many, it's not actually real good. To have to give us Ezra Bizmanazer. At least on Yom Kippur, according to many, it's a real halacha. So now that we have a little bit of the introduction, the Pasach, we have to take it with the utmost seriousness. So now let's try to understand Pasach. What is Pasach? What's not Pasach? So the Gemara tells us in the sentence of Elizara that when the Chachamim instituted Pasach, so they gave us a certain kula. And the kula was that it's only considered to be Pasach if the non-Jew bakes the bread mitchila v'yatzoif. If the Jew participates in the baking process, even a little bit, so that's not considered to be Pasach. So what does that mean practically? So this is a big machlokes that we've shown. Some Rishonim will maintain that what that means is as follows. I mean, let's say, Mark gives us an example, the Jew lights the fire. when the Jew puts the wood, he lights the fire. It's not, even though the non-Jew rolls the, you know, and eats the dough, and he puts the dough into the oven, as long as the Jew lit the fire, so that's considered to be Tas Yisrael. That's not considered to be an Issa Rabban at all. Even Bizman and Pasach was a real Halacha, so that's not considered to be Pasach. So there's a Chalakis of Rishon, and Tosi already quotes, as to what exactly that means. The Jew lit the fire, and therefore it's not Pasach. So some Rishonim say that means, if not for the lighting of the fire of the Jew, the bread wouldn't have been. I mean, this is a pretty integral part of the baking process. So if the Jew really, he stoked the coals, he really maneuvered the fire in such a way that if not for him, you wouldn't have bread on the table. So then that's cool pasta, so that's cool pasta. What if you have a situation where they're cooking with the fire, and the Jew just walks over and he takes a little, what's called Ashlochas Kisem, the Rishonim call it Ashlochas Kisem. The Jew takes a little twig and he throws it into this burning fire. This great big bonfire that you can make 20 pizza pies in 1 second, that doesn't need the extra kisem, doesn't need the extra little twig of wood that the Jew threw in. It would have survived anyway. So maybe we should say, that's not called Pas Yisrael, that's called Pas Akum. It's by Hanalei, but the Jew did. The Yisrael didn't help at all. That's called Pas Akum. And the other day in Taisa says that Ashlachas Kisem is also good enough. Why is that? So some say that the whole idea that it should be Heker B'Alma, it should just be recognizable, it should just be a hecker a little bit that the Jew participated, and therefore everyone will realize that we're not supposed to eat non-Jewish bread. It shouldn't be fully 100% non-Jewish bread. But the Jew does any mashu, even though it didn't really accomplish too much, so that's considered to be Pas Yisroel, nothing to be concerned with. So that's generally what we're making on the Shiloh. We assume that Shlachas Kisim is good. That even Ashlochas Kisem is good enough. There's a big machlokes b'zman hazeh and amongst today's Ashkocha organizations about the man of the application of this principle of Ashlochas Kisem. So there was one particular Ashkocha organizations came up with the idea of the light bulb kula. It means basically the oven bulb kula. If you have an oven, the oven is 1,000 degrees, taken away. And the guy turns on the oven, he's doing everything with the oven, and there's no Jew around for miles. And so why in the world would anybody think that's called Pas Yisrael? Because there's a light bulb that was put inside the oven by a Jew 20 years ago, and the truth is a light bulb gives off a certain degree of heat, a very, very minuscule amount of heat, but it gives in the amount of heat probably as much as the kisem gives off. So one could argue that the Jew screwed in a light bulb into the oven 20 years ago, and now the light bulb is still going, keeps on going, so that's considered to be Ashlochas, the equivalent of Ashlochas Kisem. So that was one particular Ashlochas conversation with a lot of the school, and others felt that was not even Ashlochas Kisem, Ashlochas. So there are different permutations of this. There are the glow plugs, so all kind of different, and what works in Ashlochas, I'll tell you. These different nuances that some will accept. But other kinds of devices, which are supposed to be the more high-tech 21st century application, of this principle of Ashlochas Kisem. But again, the basic principle is there, that if a Jew participates in the baking a little bit, that would not be considered to be Pas Akum. There wasn't a point of like this, not about Pas Akum, but about Bishul Akum, as to whether this rule applies to Bishul Akum as well. The Gemara is Pederish that if the Jew Mamish lights the fire, he really lights the fire, and then the guy does the baking, that's for sure not Pas Akum. So some Rishonim said, yeah, that was a cooler by Pas Akum, but that doesn't carry over to Bishul Akum. Bishul Akum is more common than Pas Akum. Bishul Akum, the Gemara also says that the Jew participates in the cooking, that's not called Bishul Akum. But here, some Rishonim say, only if the Jew participates in the cooking itself. If the Jew literally cooks this food, so he puts the food on the fire, he stirs the food, he touches the pot, he touches the contents of the food, that's not called Bishul Akum. The fact that the Jew just lit a fire 20 minutes ago, and then he left, that's still called Bishul Akum. That's how Shulchan Aruch baskets. And the Rambam calls the Ashkenazi Rishonim who are Mekil, who said that just as a Mekil on Pas Akum, lighting of the fire is sufficient, so to lighting of the fire is sufficient for to remove any problems of Bishul Akum as well. That's what happened in Egypt. That's what all the restaurants, all the Hashkachas, and all the catering establishments in America rely on this cool of the Rambam. The Minigim of the Ashkenazim is that as long as the Jew lit the fire one time, that's good enough. That's why when the Mashkiach comes into a restaurant, so what the Mashkiach's first job is to turn on the fire. So the Mashkiach has to turn on all the lights, all the ovens, all the stoves, etc. Then the guy can cook the whole day on the fire that was put on by the Jew. When the fire goes out, so then obviously the Jew has to be called in to relight the fire. That's why any good Hashkacha organization will have absolute explicit orders for all the workers there that they're the no circumstances they permit to turn on the stove. If the non-Jew turns on the stove, that could potentially throw off the entire food in the entire establishment. So that's one of the important things that Hashgacha organization is good. Hashgacha organization will be very, very strong about. Usually there'll be signs that are posted in different languages to make sure that everybody who's working there knows how to read the signs. That signs that are posted saying explicitly that not to adjust the flags. I remember once I went to some place on I went to speak somewhere called my place at the hotel. So they asked once I was there, they asked me to stay for the meal. So that's why I went to the first place. they were having this big barbecue by the poolside or something, and they had these Chinese things, where they not the food, the thing itself, but it's a little
sternum.
Sternum. It's a little snitch, a little fire thing. So apparently they were cooking up some stuff in these sternos, and there were a lot of non-Jews who were working around over there. So apparently there was one yeshiva bacher who was working for the Mashiach. His job, the whole place, that's what he did, it's not a Sarasena, his entire yontif is to run around lighting up these things. This poor kid is 14 years old. He's running around striking matches, and this one, and running that one, and to make sure this one went out. So the guy's called from the other side of the pool, this one went out, and he goes, jump across the pool. That's what he did. That's the entire day. I guess some people like that application.
Can you adjust it? Can the non-Jew adjust it? They can kind of
So the Sfarim would not accept this. The Sfarim hold that you have to, in order to avoid the falafel problem, you have to mamish work on the food itself. That's what all the restaurants that we have, all the caterings, everything that we have set up in America, is all the shalachim for Shemar. So Rav Yosef writes to Chuba that, well, some of the Sfarim want to rely on the kula, so maybe the coach of Shachabat can rely on the kula. What's the kula? So Rav Yosef writes that Sfarim. So there's one day in Tosis that we don't pass the like Malach. One day in Tosis says, Bishalacham only applies if cooking is done in the non-Jew's house. But if it's done in the Jew's establishment, the Jewish house, then there's no Bishalacham. So we don't pass like that. But if Rav Yosef says the Sufek, so what's the Sufek say? He says, Sufek Echad, maybe since it's a Jewish establishment, assuming that it's owned by Jews, the restaurant, the catering place, so then maybe there's no Bishalacham. And even if there is Bishalacham, maybe it's up to Rav Yosef, maybe the Ashkenaz Marai, maybe. Check, what is that chance?
Rabbanim in America today, they spoke from Shalom, we told them that was also. So we're still trying to make sense out of Shalom. That one, we must have talked to make sense out of that statement.
Pash is according to another comment that Shalom had from the shop, it shouldn't be a problem. So that's the shop. Anyway, get back to the story. So the Sfarim, it's not a big pickle, it's not a big problem. So most Sfarim will make it, it follows through the body, they don't know. Even the Ashkenazi establishments, there's some Sfarim who really insist to follow the Shulchan Aruch, who would not eat in any of these places. So you have two options: if you don't eat, or there are some restaurants that will let you, if you just have to have like a card saying you follow the Mishnah, so you present your Mishnah card, and they say, okay, we'll let you go to the back. So they'll let the guy flip your own burgers if he wants. There are some restaurants that will let you, if you claim, you tell the Mashkiach if you're inspired, he'll let you go to the bath and cook the burger yourself, so that it's real Mashkiach is wrong. Remember, this was an issue many years ago with the calf guards, 20 years ago when they started the calf guards. So there were a bunch of Sfarim came to the administration and said, that's not fair. He said, we have to pay for the meals, and we're Sfarim because Shulchan Aruch is a serious problem with the kashrus. So then after that, so then a bunch of briskets came in and said that we're Mafin and Yashan, so we can't buy kappa. Everyone had their own kappa. Everyone had their own kappa. So I don't know what the answer was exactly. According to the Subri and the Shulchan Aruch, it is a problem. But again, we don't follow that. I'm going to be like, well, we would make up that as long as Allah Masha'esh, Allah Masha'esh is good enough, not only for Pas Akam, but it's good for Bishal Akam as well. What exactly constitutes Pas Akam? What's considered to be Pas that would have been included in the original Nisar? And therefore, during the Sesame Chuga, we have to be Makbid on that, Medina, Khumar, Minna, whatever it is. What exactly constitutes Pas? So, anyone here learned Brachas last year? Anyone against Mavarchan? How long do we spend this to give Lechem? Here for a year? close on the definition of lacha. It was almost as long as we spent on Chashil and Mirza. So it was a long, sugya. Many, many, many different permutations. Right? Remember this much? It's fun stuff. Yeah, who remembers the Mishnah Challah? He lost the Issa, but so was Sufkin and the ring bell. Yeah, there you go. New rock. Come on, let's go. We made a dam. Rash. There you go. So we know what bread is. What do you have to spend 6 months learning what bread is? Don't know what bread is. You take flour, you water, you throw it up, it's like a bread. I got a lot of things that are not so posh, whether they're really considered to be bread or not. So there was a big machlekes and rishonim in places that separate from dates and quotes. So what about cakes and cookies? Are they considered to be bread for these purposes? Yeah, about cookie, chocolate chip cookies. Is that called pasachum? So one day in Taisa, that's not called pasachum. You don't make hamotzi on, you make mazonos and chocolate chip cookies. Make alamich and chocolate chip cookies. So that's not called pas, but the definition of pasachum is a function of if it's hamotzi lechem and aretz. Want to know what's the litmus test? Whether you have an issue of pas in front of you, give the brothers a motzi, that is called pasachum. Therefore, cookies are not considered to be pasachum. What are they considered to be? Taisa says, if they're not pasachum, what are they? Then the bishalachum in the tray. So comes Taisa and says, all enter is cookies in Amish tray. Because the bishalachum, pasachum is good, pasachum is mutter during the rest of the year. So Taisa says, pas is only defined by something which you recite a motzi on, you don't recite a motzi on cookies, and a discussion. The other day in Taisus quotes another opinion that says, no, you're right, that pas is defined by what you make a motzi lechem and aretz on. Well, you do make a motzi lechem and aretz on cookies. And what? If you eat enough cookies. So we know cookies fall into the category what's going on for pas above the kisnin. The Gemara says in, once again, a case of the Varchin, so that if a person eats enough pas above the kisnin, so then he would be required to recite a motzi lechem and aretz. How many weeks did we spend the pas above the kisnin? That was the other half of the year. So the one half of the year, lechem, the other half pas above the kisnin. And if you want to be kuvim and oral and shvi'is, right? No, come one group of Bali Ates and say no, that the Ikaron the first day is right, that anytime you make a motzi on something, that's called pas, but in theory you could make a motzi on cookies if you would have enough cookies, whatever it is, like Al bates them, or 21 air bates them, or the amount you eat with the meal, whatever the different shirim and the Gedolei HaBosim of last year's shirim are what constitutes the Chilas Keva. There is a concept, because of Kriya Sudha, there is a concept of reciting a motzi lechem aretz on cookies. And therefore, when you present the day of Tzitzis, cookies, Baruch Hashem, are pasachum. They're not mishalachum, and therefore they're okay. They're also during the Seres Nechuma, but they're okay the rest of the year. So these are 2 days of Tzitzis. Now, Allah and Rabbah make, or the Rabbah in the beginning of Chalik Beis in Yodea, to quote the opinion of Tzitzis Lahavel, that anything that's called pasachum b'kistim, since in theory you could get hamotzi, so therefore it has a kula of pas, and therefore we can rely on the kula of pas palter, and therefore you can eat the end of the cookies during the rest of the year. However, during the Seres Mechuvah you shouldn't, because during the Seres Mechuvah we go back to the old minhag, to the chumrah of not relying on any kulas of pas palter. Therefore, really, the proper thing to do is not to eat any of those kosher, as I know you want it, but one should really refrain from eating these kinds of cookies and cakes during the Seres Mechuvah, because it's called pas, right? It's pas, but pas palter is also during the Seres Mechuvah. Unless one wants to rely on the following kula, the Rav Moshe had a suggestion that originally he said in the realm of Bishalach, Rav Moshe the Chiddush Gadol, Rav Moshe says that the whole Gezeirah of Pasach or Bishalach are all Gezeirah Shem Chastas. He says, Rav Moshe, what if you have a situation where it's impossible that eating this food should ever bala de chastas? It's not impossible. Why is it impossible? Because there's no way in a million years you could ever figure out who actually baked these cookies. So where did that thing bake? Where's the bakery? Is there one that thing bakery or
one
Halapark. What?
One
Halapark. Okay, so Halapark. So you're going to go find out which non-Jew pressed the button on you look at the code of the cookie, go figure out who's working on the shift that time, and you're afraid you're going to marry his daughter. Very unlikely, said Rabbi Shah. Rabbi Shah said, you have a situation where it's a factory setup, it's a professional, it's not just a professional baker, it's a Stamish manufacturer. So says Rabbi Shah, that's not considered to be, that's even less than Paspalva. So there's Paspalva bias, that's the worst. Then there's paspalta, which is okay all year, but we should refrain from the Seres Mechuvah. And then there's even less than paspalta. So when years ago in Yeshiva, I don't remember anymore, but Grandma's Cookie Store still exists? Still called Grandma's? Okay, so now it's owned by a Jewish fellow, right? But it used to be owned by, anyone remember? A Grandma and Grandpa? Yeah, it was about before your time, right? So it used to be there was a Greek couple. What do you put them? Yeah, it's a long time. I remember when it opened. So grandma, I'll tell you exactly when it opened. It opened in my second year in YU. I remember. We were learning Ksubis. It was 83. I'll tell you why. How do I know I was learning Ksubis that year? Because in my Gemara Ksubis, I have brownie stains. Every morning for breakfast. And the whole first 20 blocks are full of brownies. Anyway. So it was opened by a Greek couple, grandma and grandpa. Probably they, grandma and grandpa. They opened up a cookie store. So at the time, there was a ha'ara that was made that this is mamish, this is classic paspalter. Why? On the one hand, I don't have a social relationship. It's not like they're baking for me in their house and they go to the house and they eat their hoogies. So it's not paspalter bias. On the other hand, it's not intimate cookies. It's not that I don't know who. I know exactly. Grandma's cooking. What they're in the morning, open the store, and they'd be baking. Everybody knows what was going on. Everyone knew who was making the cookies. So lechora, that should be a classic. That's the case of Chazal. You can't get more paspalter than this. So there was a ha'ara of the around yeshiva that turned into Seir Tshuva. People should refrain from eating it. Imagine you had the store opened up at the beginning of September, and they made a kosher because they were told that originally they were going to open the store and not kosher. Somebody told them it would be a good idea. I think we'll understand Professor Schneider. Is the teacher there? He used to live in the Heights. He was their neighbor. So he heard that they were going to open up a cookie store, a trade for cookie store. So he impressed upon them that it may be worth their while financially to make a kosher. Okay, so they were masking. So the first day they had 400 MTA kids there, so it was well worth their while. Then the next day was Rosh Hashanah. And then the next day, first day, says, no one wants to come and buy cookies anymore because it's trade, because it's Pasachim. So it was a whole uproar in yeshiva. So they decided, I think at the time, that we'll make a Pasach roll. How do you make a Pasach roll? Very simple. Have a Jew go in and turn on the fires. So it was under Ashkach anyway. It was under, in those days, believe it or not, you know what organization was in the Ashkach business? SOY. It used to be an SOY Ashkach. I kid you not. They gave Ashkach on the cookie store, and they gave Ashkach on one of the pizza stores here, and one of the takeout stores here. SOY, SOY Strong Spell slash Ashkach. But that's long ended, that proof. At the end of the year, if nobody learns anything with us, at least you get a really, really good smattering of the last 25 years of Yeshiva University. You get some really interesting tidbits of information. Anyway, get back to the story. So real paspalter, so we have to be mapped on it, says the Jula. But if it's this manufactured kind of stuff, so maybe it's a tzad local. So some accept it, some didn't accept it. Lechatchila, I think you should accept it. I think lechatchila, otherwise this whole minik falls away. So this whole chumrah of living up to a little bit of a higher standard in terms of pasakum disappears b'smanazeh. Because if you can tell me that all the intimate stuff is mutter anyway, so then it's my highlight the takonas, then the whole minik doesn't really apply b'smanazeh. Lechatchila, why don't you try to be careful? Why don't you buy their Jewish bread during this week? You shouldn't buy the regular Fraunhofer's bread and that kind of stuff. You shouldn't buy the intimate cookies. You should buy the Hamish cookies. Rising, the Rungala, buy the good old, the old fashioned stuff. Buy the what kind of bread?
Zomix
bread, there you go. Buy the real Hamish and Pasta Israel stuff. Yeah, that's what support your local bakeries during this time of the year. There is a shadow we spoke a lot about last year about the donuts. So there's a big machlekes harishon about whether donuts is pasachem or the donuts are bishalachem. What's the issue of donuts are not baked, donuts are deep fried. So according to most of the Rishonim, donuts are not even in the parsha being passed. If you would eat 100 jelly donuts, you would not recite the bracha of hamotzer, and that's not called pasach bechlal. Under Rabbeinu Tam disagreed. The pasach of Rabbeinu Tam pointed out the time that if donuts are not really passed, and even if you eat a lot of donuts, so you would never recite hamotzer, that's not passed, and it's bishul. Everything is either passed or bishul. So if it's bishul, the donuts should not be treif. So he said that the Pashta farm is that all the Dunkin' Donuts and all the Krispy Kremes, everything should be Mamash Kreif Gomor, even if it has Ashkach, because it's Mamash Enoch HaBishalachim Golem Yizol. So we said at the time that we could save it with the Fena Ola Shulchan Malachim. Because everybody knows they don't serve these donuts at fancy meals. We've been verified that even though President Bush did serve it at the Hanukkah dinner a couple of years ago, but that's only because it was Hanukkah. But on a regular day, he doesn't, the ambassador of Zimbabwe comes, he doesn't serve them jelly donuts, so it's not considered to be normal food for president, so therefore we assume that it's not Ola Shulchan Malachim, and therefore it would be okay. We also know the Ora, that since the cooler for the jelly donuts, or the cooler for the Dunkin' Donuts, is based on Eina Olash of Malacha, that's looked even during the Seras Mechuvah. Because the Chumra was not to follow the Kulav Pas Palta. That's what the Minig Yisrael was, not to rely on the Kulav Pas Palta. Something which is Eina Olash of Malacha is a real Kulav from the days of Chazal. The Chazal and the Sakh and the Bishalakam doesn't apply, but it's a cheap inferior type of a food. And that's a Hetel Lechat Chilu Shabachilu. There's nothing wrong with that at all, relying on that Kulav of Eina Olash of Malacha. We had a strange discrepancy last year. We pulled Ma'ora that to eat Entenmann's cookies, you should be Machpe during the Seras Mechuvah. But to eat Dunkin' Donuts, Dunkin' Donuts, Mamash, on your way to Kol Nidre, as long as it's not, not too late in the day, you can eat your Dunkin' Donuts, it's Mutl Chachila, because that, you're not relying on any Kula. There's no Kula. It's Mamash Hetagomor, because that's called Eina Olash of Malacha. It's a strange twist of a fate in terms of your donuts. I think we said the Entenmann's donuts are not real donuts, right? Sponge cake with some chocolate coating on it.
Cereals.
Cereals, yeah. The Fionius idea, I don't think the cereals are a problem of the pasta. It doesn't have a tourist pasta. It was going out last year. It's not tourist pasta bechlal. So why shouldn't it be bishalakum? That's a different question. Why maybe it's not bishalakum? I know there are others, some chashur or barbu disagree, but the Fionius, I don't understand how why there should be any problem of bishalakum, pasta on the cereals. So Rabbi Sain, just a couple of words of Chizuk Thesaurus. Strange minig we have. 344 days of the year, so we have our entomins, and we have our flap, and bread, and invites about what's out today, paspalt, everything's a great quality. Comes the Seras Mechuvah, and all of a sudden everything changes. It's my strange minig. The Rishonim writes, when they defend the practice of Klal Yisrael to be very, very mateful and pasachim all year long, they quote a pasuk in Vashezekiah, "Ki lo al alechem levad yichya ha'adam." So when they quote the pasuk, they take out the word "lo." They write, "Ki al alechem levad yichya ha'adam." I mean, the reason why the Rishonim, why they were so lenient about this iser of pasachim, because it was a gzeir shein rov tzibuchan lahu, because people leave me bread. You can't live. The bottom line is bread is the basic food. You can't live without bread. So since it's almost impossible to see if people surviving without bread, the Yavach HaChamu will make it. So the Rishonim, in a cute way, in a sense, paraphrase the Pasuk. The Pasuk, opposite, we know what the Pasuk says, Ki loya alechem levad yichya adam. So the Rishonim said, yeah, but lemaisa, al alechem levad yichya adam. Lemaisa, people need bread. So what's Pshat Rabbi saying, this minig that we have during the Seras Mechuvah, to refrain from Pasuk? I think the aside is that for 10 days a year we read the Pasuk Kipshuta. That for 10 days a year we come to the Rebbeinu Shalom and say, Rebbeinu Shalom, we can live without our bread. Those things that we think are so necessary during the rest of the year, we can't survive without Entenmann's donuts, we can't survive without the Entenmann's donuts, we can't live without the bread, we can't live without bread. We say to the Rebbeinu Shalom, 10 days a year we can live without bread. 10 days a year we can live with Divrei Torah. But this statement is not just a detailed statement about bread. It's not bread cookies. It's not really. It's much more than that. Much deeper than that. There's a inner turmoil built into the very nature of the human being. We refer to it one of the slichas, Gufu Neshama Im Terivayim. There's a fight. There's a conflict going on within the person's very essence between body and soul. Body and soul are so different from one another. They're mamashi, they're tugging in different directions. The body is bringing a person down. The body has certain needs and certain desires, certain wants. And the neshama is a whole different ballgame. There's a whole different series of different wants and different needs and different desires. It's mamash like a tug of war. We get stuck in the middle. And we spend our entire life, maybe some shana, being stuck in the middle between the neshama pulling and tugging in one direction and the goof pulling in another direction. Goof and neshama in three ways, as it says. How do you make shalom between the goof and the neshama? How do you alleviate some of this tension between the goof and the neshama? So the answer is very simple. The answer is, you have to get them to work together. But even though you have to get them to work together, you have to always answer the question, Mi Barosh. Parshas Vayelech, and that's 2 weeks Parsha. Mishra Beinu, when he appoints Yoshua, So he says, okay, Yeshua, you're going to lead Al Yisrael, and you're going to have the Zakenim, we're going to help you, and it's going to be a whole democracy, and everyone's going to work together, you're going to have 12 different leaders, it's going to... So what does Rabbi Shalom say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Who remembers Rashi says, tell Yeshua that it's nice and it's true, he's going to have a lot of assistance, and he's going to have a lot of helpers, and he's going to have to see him, but the buck stops here with Yeshua. He's the leader. He's the Rosh. At the end of the day, he's the one who's calling the shots. At the end of the day, it's very nice, and there's a Congress, and there's a this, and there's a that. At the end of the day, so we know who's the top. At the end of the day, so there's only one person who decides either you press the button or you don't press the button. So the Gulman and Shama, it's all nice and dandy to talk about them working together, but it's got to be crystal clear as Gibbe Rosh. Who's leading and who's following? Who's setting the policy and who's implementing the policy? And Rabbi say, we start off the new year, we start off Rosh Hashanah, we make it clear who's calling the shots. The neshama has a certain desires of komotza pi Hashem yichi adam, and the guf has desires of alechem levaldi yichi adam. And you know what we say to the guf for the first 10 days of the year? We say, listen, Mr. Guf, you're not in charge. You're not going to dictate policy right now. Right now, opening day, the neshama dictates what our needs are, what our tzrachim are. And we totally, completely redefine ourselves as koach and neshama. We are spiritual beings during Aseres HaMetshuva. We're setting policy, we're setting it clear from day one who's sitting in the driver's seat. The neshama's in the driver's seat. The rabbi say it cannot be any clearer than the day of Yom Kippur. There's one day a year where the guf is not only in the driver's seat, it's non-existent. The guf has zero to say on Yom Kippur. There is no semblance of anything dash with ki hu zeh on Yom Kippur. The guf is completely and totally ignored. The neshama reigns on Yom Kippur as a culmination of association. Now we know who's the boss, now we know who's the judge, now we know who's dictating policy. We turn around to the guf and we say, we can't live without you. If your Bashar didn't want you, then he would have just made us all malach, he wouldn't have made us people. It was Bashar the Kotzke, the Anche Kodesh Tiyuli. Plus it says in the Shabbat, the Anche Kodesh Tiyuli. The Kotzke used to say, it doesn't say malach and Kodesh Tiyuli. Bashar doesn't want any more malach. He's got millions of malach, he's got more malach than the world needs. He needs a, as the phrase go, we need a good, few good what? A few good men. That's what we need. We need a few good holy men. The Anche Kodesh Tiyuli. Matzoyim Kippur, what does the Bas Kol come down from Shemayim, or what does it say? The Bas Kol says, Leich Echol what? Echol Achmecha? Shtei Hemecha Ki Ratzal Atimus Masecha. And Matzoyim Kippur, the Bas Kol says, now you can have your intimate cookies. Now you can eat your fried Afra's bread. Leich Echol Achmecha. Now it's okay. You know why it's okay? Because now that you realize that the pasuk really means kiloi alacha, more than an hour. Once you've ascertained that, then it's okay to eat the bread. Now is it okay? It's alright, fine. It's the moment. Eat the bread, drink the wine. You rotsu l'kibas la'asecha. The mitzvah of Sukkah is mamish the antithesis of the day of Yom Kippur. You cannot get any different, any more different than the mitzvah of Yom Kippur and the mitzvah of Sukkah. Yom Kippur is the antithesis of the guf, where everything which involves the guf is negated. And Sukkot is the only mitzvah which involves the entire guf. The Sefer Mitzvah is Katan, so he divides all the different mitzvahs lefi ha'ivar ha'adam. So tefillin you do on your arm, and this filter rosh on your head, and other mitzvahs involve your feet, and your mouth, and your ears. And there's only one mitzvah that involves your entire body. That's the mitzvah Shiva Basukkah. Your entire guf from head to toe is in the Sukkah. But what are you doing in the Sukkah? Oichel, v'shoyse. That's the mitzvah of Yeshiva Basukkah. Because Yeshiva Basukkah only makes sense post Yom Kippur. After the Basko was yotze and said, Echol lachmecha, shtei yenecha. As long as we know who's the boss, we know, we got it clear from day one, the first 10 days of the year, that the lechem doesn't rule, the tzorech yeguf doesn't rule, the tzorech hanashama rules, then you can enjoy the tzorech yeguf. And forget, then the Tzorach and Guf can become transformed to serve as mitzvahs. Then Yeshiva Basukkah becomes a mitzvah deraisa. then the goof takes on its true role as the Mesharis of the Neshama. And that inner conflict in the days of Slichas, goof and Neshama into Rivein, no longer exists. Now the Shalom Meshalva within a person's body, within a person's Neshama, is no more war. Now it's a type of Shalom. So Ufros Alena Sukkah Shalom Mecha. It's not only true in terms of the Shalom, external Shalom, but it's an internal Shalom, it's an inner peace. What a person realizes that now the time has come for the group of Neshama to work together. Okay, listen, we'll stop here. Finish them tomorrow. So, love.